Welcome to the Sacktown Royalty Show. This is Greg from Sacktown Royalty, your host for the episode. And this week we're doing something a little bit different. We're doing a Q&A with questions that you, the faithful reader, submitted via Sacktown Royalty. Sorry that we've been so lacking in the podcast lately. We've been dealing with some issues with my computer sucking. We've been dealing with issues with my recording equipment not recording people. So promise, we're trying to get it back on track. I figured this would be a good way to bridge the gap. That being said, we may not have it fully back on track until we get kind of some kinks worked out in the summer. But appreciate you sticking with us. Let's jump into the questions. First question from Up and Smoke 916. What the hell happened to the SCR show? It used to be something I would look forward to. So aside from the reasons I just gave, your biggest problem is that you actually looked forward to the show. I can't help you having poor taste in podcasts. No, jokes aside, I appreciate everyone listening. And again, really sorry that it's been such a gap between shows. I was looking at it today. We haven't done a show since DeMarcus Cousins was traded. So after I get through some of these questions, I may just finish up with some general kind of high-level thoughts on the season since the trade. But jumping into the actual questions, I tried mostly to go with the ones that you guys upvoted or the ones that stood out to me. So first question from our own Bryant West. The STR staff gets randomly stuck on a desert island. How long before Brad is killed? Section 214 added in, why do we need an island? I'm going to take this question as it is, though, and just kind of focus on the facts. Brad sticks around despite everyone hating him. Like, if you're thinking about this as Survivor, he's the guy that everyone hates but somehow never gets voted off. I think similarly, he would turn us against each other and we would all end up killing each other first. And somehow Brad would be the last one surviving with like an old VHS tape of Steven Seagal movies or something. A Hong Kong Kings fan asks, any way to get Rudy Gay to opt out of his contract? Well, I mean, recent reports are that he is ahead of schedule for his rehabilitation. He's able to do some light exercises, some light squats. We saw him getting up some shots the other day when, I mean, he can't really do full mobility. He's not 100% by any means, but he's definitely on track to be ready for training camp, which if you're in the group that wants him to opt out, that's a good sign, because if he can legitimately like go in and do some workouts as a free agent and show teams that he's healthy and is, you know, his representation's confident he's going to be able to do that, there's a shot he could still opt out. You know, maybe he wants to just be in a better situation and is willing to sacrifice a little bit of short-term money. I mean, it's tough for any of us to really fathom walking away from $14 million guaranteed, but, you know, I guess if you are pretty confident that you could get at least that much over a couple of years and be in a better situation where you're happier, more long-term stability, I guess maybe you do that. I think the other question is, do Kings fans actually want that? I mean, if he opts out versus opts in. If he opts out, okay, the Kings have even more cap space that they don't have the roster spaces to really do anything with. And, you know, they've got nothing to show for Rudy Gay. You know, that was kind of the worst case scenario, is that the Kings wouldn't trade him. By the time the trade deadline came around, they couldn't because of his Achilles injury. If he opts in and plays well at least for a couple games at the start of the season, he at least may be able to fetch minimal trade value. I mean, he's still going to be an expiring contract, no long-term security for anyone getting him. So, you know, maybe you get a first-rounder if you're lucky. I wouldn't really count on that. You know, maybe second-round pick, maybe some filler players. I'm not sure. But, you know, if he sticks around, at least there's the chance that maybe you get something in return for him. But at this point, I'm in wait and see with Rudy. I wouldn't be surprised either way. I don't think it's out of the question at this point that he does opt out. Non-Striped Zebra asks, are there any free agents that you believe fit with the new timetable based on like youth, upside, development, worth the Kings overpaying or front-loading their contracts while our nucleus is still on the rookie scale or generally still being undervalued this offseason? I think the one guy that several people have latched onto, I'm not the first to say this, but Otto Porter is the guy that the Kings, on day one of free agency, should be throwing a ton of money at. He is still young. He's a good two-way player. I mean, he's young enough that he fits with the timetable of the core, but he's established himself as a guy who is going to get max money. Now, the one downside is that the Kings are probably not going to be the only team offering him max or near max money. You're probably going to be looking at, you know, teams like the Nets who have some cap space. I don't know off the top of my head the other teams that have a ton of cap space this summer. I know the Nets definitely do. So is Sacramento more appealing than the Nets situation? That I don't know. Will Otto Porter take a little bit of a discount to stay in Washington? I mean, I don't think that'd be a great career move, but he played at Georgetown, so he's from that area. Especially now that Washington's actually kind of playing well, if they make some noise in the playoffs, that might be harder to walk away from than it looked like it was going to be at the start of this year. But if he's out there, if he's available, the Kings should absolutely make a run at him. They should be using Garrett Temple, who played with him in Washington, to try to recruit him. Like, hey, we got a good thing going here. Come join us. I mean, he would be a wonderful fit at the small forward position for the Kings going forward. Next question is from Sacramento X720. Would you trade Willie Cauley-Stein this summer for a young guard and then pick up a big in the draft? Whew, it would have to be one heck of a guard you're getting back in return. And, I mean, that's not even overvaluing Willie so much as it is looking at this draft and what is going to be there. This is a guard-heavy draft, a lot of point guards. I don't think you need to trade Willie, especially as well as he's played since the Cousins trade. You know, a guy who can be an impact on both ends of the floor, although we haven't seen as much of the defense this year. I wouldn't give up on him unless you were getting a really good guard that was both young and established. I mean, the type of player that teams probably aren't giving up on that type of player just to get Willie Cauley-Stein. So, I mean, if the right deal came along, of course, you would definitely, you're never going to say never. Willie's definitely not untradeable. But I would lean away from it just because there's so many good young guards in this draft. Clam asked, favorite Sacktown royalty meme? And really, there are so many great ones to pick from. I tend to be a little bit more in favor of the older ones. You know, like Nobody Expects the Yeti or Carl Landry is wearing a top hat, so your argument is invalid. Those are some of my all-time favorites. Recently, I think The Mindless Fools is a really good one, although it doesn't seem to have staying power. I'm curious to see if that one sticks around. I mean, it was an epic fan post thread where we learned that we are all mindless sheep for thinking that the NBA isn't rigged. But that one's a pretty fun one. I know a lot of people really like the one that I ruin marriages. That's a pretty funny one. I like them all. I'm a fan of all the memes. The more inside jokes we have, the more outsiders will be afraid to come to the site. And that's what it's all about for those of us who write for it, right? I'm not so sure about that. Don't tell Akis. Next question from SMFPDX Connection. Actually, he gave us 6 questions. I'm not going to answer all of them. Let's see here. Would you rather have Marty never post another meme, Section never post another pun, or me never post another GIF? Well, Section never posting another pun means that Section is dead, and I don't want Section to die, and how dare you insinuate such a thing. So for that, I am punishing you, and I hope that you never post another GIF. Another question was, can you buy me a beer next time I'm in Colorado? Probably not. I am extremely hermit these days. I am studying for some professional designations that take up a lot of my time. I've got 2 kids with a third on the way this summer. I am both broke and have no free time or energy. So if you want to come out and buy me a beer, that might entice me to actually go out, but you are on your own for picking up the check. Last is not necessarily a specific question, because there was a lot of questions around the same general idea, which is kind of, if we fall in these ranges, who do you think we should take? I'll tell you what, there's a lot of good talent in this draft. I am not the draft expert. I rely on people who actually pay attention to this stuff for more than a month a year. I pay some attention to the tournament, and even then it's pretty minimal. Here's what I'll say. I think that Markel Fultz should be the number one. I don't think that Lonzo Ball is going to overtake him. Even though, a lot of people are kind of saying, don't put his dad's personality on him. He's a totally different kid. Like, I'm imagining the nightmare that would be LeVar Ball in play in the Sacramento situation, where things are already such kind of a small town vibe with the team. Everything's so tightly knit and everything kind of blows up into drama anyway, that I don't really want that, even if the Kings had a really high pick. Yeah, so I mean, if the Kings pick second, I don't know. I leave it to smarter decision makers than me, because I could be totally wrong. The kid could be amazing, but I'm not as sold on him from what little I have seen between highlight tapes, you know, video breakdowns on Draft Express, which are primarily where I learn from things. I mean, they do in-depth breakdowns. They show good and bad and everything in between. So if you're researching, guys, definitely check that out. But, you know, I read Bryant's draft profiles. He pays a lot more attention to this stuff. I tend to trust him. I trust other people that are out there from, you know, not just Sacktown Royalty, but from other sites. There are guys that I think look really good, like a Tatum kid from Duke seems like he'd be a good guy to land. The point guard, I don't know how to say his name, Nedelinka or whatever, something like that. If the Kings end up with like the 9th or 10th pick, I could see him being a play, and I think I could get myself pretty excited about him as kind of the long-term point guard of the future. I don't know. I'm still way too early, and I'm the wrong guy to ask in the first place, so I'm just going to move on from that. So switching gears now and just kind of going back to what I said about how we kind of need to get back to talking about the Boogie trade. I never got around to being able to do a podcast just because of recording issues and things like that. It was obviously a huge, huge change for the organization. It was something that I didn't feel great about at first, but in the time that's passed, it's been pretty easy to kind of buy into the future. I think that the chemistry on the team is noticeably great. You can attribute that to subtracting out Boogie and the quote-unquote dark cloud. You could just attribute it to a bunch of young guys kind of learning and playing together and getting minutes. I don't know. I think it's interesting how well the team is playing, even without him, that they're still a bad team. They were a bad team before, though. And you get rid of DeMarcus Cousins, they haven't fallen back quite as much as I originally expected. So, for whatever that's worth, I think it's interesting. Moving forward, obviously, I'm thrilled with the development of Scalabissiere. I love what we've seen from Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield has been a lot better than I expected when we got him in the trade. He's been better than I thought he would be coming out of the draft, and I was pretty high on him pre-draft. Again, don't trust me on the draft. I know nothing. But really excited about those two as key cornerstone building blocks going forward. And Willie Cauley-Stein, I touched on it earlier, he has thrived since that trade. It's been really great to see Willie Cauley-Stein really be able to step up, have a much bigger role, and really take advantage of that opportunity. Beginning of this season, we were talking about if the Kings should sell low on him, just, you know, get rid of him while you could still get anything, because he was looking disengaged, he was just out of it, wasn't playing well. All of that is gone. Now, there could still be some underlying concerns there, but for now, I'm really excited with what we've seen from Willie. And even Yorgos Papagiannis, I'm excited that he has been on the floor during not garbage time and looked like not garbage. I mean, he has had some decent moments. He's put up a double-double already, which, based on Summer League and early reviews out of Reno, I wasn't sure was ever going to happen for him at the NBA level. I mean, he was young, and obviously it's still too early to write him off or say he's made it, but I am excited that he's actually looked like he might be somewhat worthwhile. And then, you know, it's been disappointing that Malachi Richardson's been out. The Kings just announced a couple days ago that he is definitely going to be shut down for the remainder of the season. I'm excited to see what it looks like with him coming back next year. I know there's been a lot of talk in the boards about could the Kings maybe slide him over and have him play some small forward. You know, put Buddy Hield at the 2, put Malachi at the 3. Malachi's only 6'6", but he's got a huge wingspan, a huge standing reach. I mean, he's got the length that even if he's not traditional, quote-unquote, small forward height, he could probably play there if the Kings don't address that spot in other ways. If they do, I mean, between Buddy, Malachi, and Garrett Temple, you've got a really great core for your shooting guard position with guys that, you know, could maybe slide down to 3 in some small ball lineups. That also kind of brings us to Ben McLemore. That was something that a couple other people, you know, multiple people were asking me about in the questions for this podcast. I'm ready to see Ben McLemore move on. I mean, he's had some good stretches. He's had some moments. I think that with what we're seeing from Buddy Hield, with what we saw earlier this year from Malachi Richardson and having Garrett Temple, I don't see where Ben McLemore has the minutes. I think it's one of those things where his career is probably going to be better for him if he moves on, and the Kings will be better off not trying to fit him into the rotation. You know, I'll wish him the best, no hard feelings. I've always rooted for him. I'll continue to root for him, but I wouldn't want to see the Kings use a roster spot on bringing him back. Oh, and Bogdan Bogdanovic is probably coming over, too. I forgot about him. So there's another shooting guard. So I just think it's going to be a numbers game, and where are you going to spend your roster spots? Because the Kings really are going to start facing a roster spot crunch when they get into this summer. I mean, they've got a lot of spots already committed, and that's with the unknown of whether or not Rudy Gay comes back, unknown if they keep, you know, Anthony Tolliver, which, as an aside, I really hope they do. I really like what we've seen out of Anthony Tolliver, both before the Cousins trade and after. I think he's really stepped into a great veteran mentor role. He can hit some big shots. He can hit some threes. He's just that consummate pro that doesn't leap off the page, but I think he's one of those guys that makes your team better just by having him around. And it's important to have those types of veterans when you're going through a young rebuilding team. In Sacramento, we've been rebuilding for over a decade now, so we've seen every different way you can screw up a rebuilding effort. We've seen where there weren't the right kind of vets to help guide the young guys, and everything just got handed over too soon, whether it was to Tyreke Evans or DeMarcus Cousins or any of those guys. And I don't want to see those mistakes happen again. I'd love to see Tolliver stick around. Obviously, I want to see Temple stick around. You know, the point guard situation, God, I hope they don't keep Ty Lawson. I'm ready to be done with that. Darren Collison, I know a lot of people are ready to be done with it. I won't shed a tear if he moves on to, you know, a different situation. If he comes back, I think it's going to be at a reasonable price. I think you could do worse. I'm not going to be excited about it, but I think that if we look at kind of the rebuilding effort that happened in Philadelphia and use that as a model, I think one of the big things that they screwed up along the way was that they never had solid point guard play. And I think for developing good guys who aren't a point guard, you need to have a solid point guard to get them the ball. So if you think about it in that sense, I could see holding on to Darren Collison and just, you know, maybe a short-term deal, maybe 2 or 3 years is all, maybe a team option after two. I don't know. Again, I'm not advocating for it, but I'm also not as eager to get him out the door as I am, for example, Ty Lawson. Speaking of Philadelphia, we've got some rumors about Sam Hinkie. The Kings deny that they've reached out to him, but Mark Stein and Adrian Wojnarowski are two of the most reputable reporters in the business. I believe them on this, especially given the Kings' recent track record of flat-out publicly lying to everyone. We are not going to trade DeMarcus Cousins. We are not going to hire George Karl. We are not going to fire George Karl. We are not going to, we are not going to, we are not going to. I mean, they just over and over and over have lied to us, to the fans, to reporters, to everyone. So the Kings' denial means nothing. Now, that doesn't mean that they're actually going to bring in Hinkie, but I believe that they spoke with him. I believe that they are searching for some help in the front office. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that it sends kind of a bad message if Vlade trades DeMarcus Cousins and kind of goes out publicly saying, like, hey, give it some time to judge this, and then the front office is like, nah, we're not going to give it any time. We're just going to, you know, fire you immediately or replace you, you know, 3 months later. I think that's a terrible look, but at the same time, I think that Vlade gets a bit of a bad rap amongst some because he has made some monstrous mistakes. This Philadelphia trade where they dumped salaries and wasted that cap space on guys like Kufis, Rondo. I mean, Kufis hasn't been terrible, but still, like, you do that trade to make that happen. You know, Bellinelli and Caron Butler was part of who they used that cap space on. I mean, that was a horrible trade. Even if the pick swaps don't bite us in the ass this year, even if the Kings are great by 2019, so that unprotected first rounder isn't as devastating, it's still just such a bad trade. And the process of how you do that trade matters just as much as the results, and I've tried to defend it, but with more and more time, I think it's an, I mean, that's a horrible trade, and you have to still keep that in consideration whenever you consider the good. You know, we're excited right now about Scal and Malachi and, you know, how Buddy Hield's doing, and so you can start to kind of talk yourself into, hey, maybe he's not that bad a GM. Maybe he's doing some good things here. You know, he had some good signings with Temple and Tolliver this summer. But then you also look at the fact that they've said, you know, character matters. And then they go out and they brought in Matt Barnes and Ty Lawson this summer. They're having, you know, they finally got rid of Matt Barnes 54 games too late, but they still have Ty Lawson. They're still pretending there's absolutely nothing going on with Ty Lawson. When he was in Denver for his court date, they got pushed back a day. They said he was out for planned rest. That wasn't planned. That wasn't rest. That was personal reasons. Just call it personal reasons. Admit it for what it is. It drives me crazy the way that the Kings are turning a blind eye to this, going to wait till the summer when he's not part of the team, and then they don't ever have to officially make a statement until they feel like it. It's cowardly, especially in light of the comments that the organization made after trading Cousins and talking about how character mattered. Whatever you think of DeMarcus Cousins' character and demeanor on the court, his character is heads and tails above some of the other guys that we've had on this roster in the past year or two. That rant over, I don't know how I feel about bringing in Hinkie in particular. I think that, you know, it's probably good to look at maybe getting Vlade some help or making Vlade a figurehead and having someone just be your day-to-day GM. I'm curious why that wouldn't just be Ken Caninella. I mean, when he was brought in, there was a lot of talk about how he was being brought in because he was viewed as a future, you know, head GM, you know, a future general manager in the league. So, I don't know. I'm not sure why you need the outside search, the outside spectacle, the public drama. I don't understand why the Kings continue to operate in this way where everything is being drugged through the public. But, you know, it is what it is. So, I'm going to wait and see. If they do bring in Hinkie, hopefully he has learned from some of his mistakes in Philadelphia, because he was certainly not flawless. The situation in Philadelphia looks really good. They've got really great draft assets going forward. They've got some good young talent out of the process. But he also did alienate people. He was not very good at communicating with ownership, which I don't think would fly very well in Sacramento. He also upset a lot of agents because of the way he manipulated the salary floor. For a team that's going to be so far below the salary floor to start the summer, that's going to be something that could make teams wary of dealing with the Kings, because that salary floor is there to kind of set the total amount of wages that'll be paid out. And when Hinkie manipulated in a way where he never actually had to pay out the full amount of the salary floor, because there's ways you can manipulate that, what that does is that drives down the total amount of money that's in the market, and agents get a percentage of that. So agents hated what he was doing. And, you know, he was very abrupt, I think is probably the best way you can say. Yeah, I mean, he was terrible at informing the public what he was doing. He never gave updates, you know, and after everything that we've seen in the past couple of years, maybe we want to go back to more of like a Petrie-style era where the GM never talks in public and it's always just kind of a mystery and you're guessing what might be going on. But I don't know. I'm not sure Hinkie's the right guy, but I get why Kings fans are excited. And if the Kings did bring him into the organization, you know full well I'd be talking myself into it from the moment it happened. I don't think it would take me that long to get on board. That being said, I'm excited with how the season's gone. I don't care that the Kings maybe have won a few more games than they should have. I'm excited to see a young team learn how to win, especially with some quality wins over good teams. Going back to mistakes of rebuilds past, that's one of those things that we didn't really see. The Kings never had the right mix of guys, the right mix of everything to make it work to where they could get quality wins over quality teams when they had young guys developing. I mean, the fact that Buddy Hield and Scalabissiere and Willie Cauley-Stein are getting those minutes and getting involved in those types of wins, that's huge. It's huge for player development, and I think that it goes further than an extra spot in the lottery, because the lottery is going to be a crapshoot. There's going to be guys in the top 10 who bust out. There's going to be guys in the, you know, bottom 20 of the first round that are great and are the next Scal in terms of guys slipping for no real reason. I think if the Kings, you know, do good scouting and manage themselves appropriately, yeah, the Kings have the potential and end up with a couple really good players, good young pieces to add to the rebuilding effort. I still think there's concerns about whether or not the Kings can pull that off. I mean, we've seen them draft okay so far in the Vladi era, but at the same time, it just takes one or two misses. One or two mistakes is all it really takes, and you can set back a rebuilding effort so far. No one knows that better than us Kings fans. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up for this week. Again, can't apologize enough for how long it's been between episodes. I will do everything in my power to get at least a couple more episodes this season, but again, probably not getting back on a regular routine until, you know, maybe this summer or maybe the start of next season. Appreciate your patience. Please bear with us. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. That's www.audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty.